It is Thursday, March 15th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, the United States imposes new sanctions against Russia over meddling in the 2016 presidential election. We get reaction.
Russia has essentially unveiled a very aggressive and conflictual approach to the United States and its Western allies.
An apparent victory for a Democrat in a congressional election sends a warning signal to Republicans, and a classic tale for children is brought to the big screen. It's all ahead. The United States has announced sanctions against Russian cyber actors for alleged interference in the U.S. election and other malicious cyber attacks. In a statement Thursday, Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin said the administration is confronting and countering what he termed malign Russian cyber activity, including their attempted interference in U.S. elections, destructive cyber attacks, and intrusions targeting critical infrastructure. Among those targeted by the sanctions are 13 Russians indicted by Special Counsel Robert Mueller, who has been probing Russian interference in the 2016 election. Also Thursday, the leaders of Britain, France, Germany, and the United States jointly condemned the poisoning of a former Russian spy on British soil that has been blamed on Moscow. They called it the first offensive use of a nerve agent in Europe since the Second World War. The joint statement says there's no plausible alternative explanation to Russia's involvement in the attack. The statement also called for Russia to address all questions related to the attack. Russia has denied involvement. Charles Kupchan is senior fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations and a professor at Georgetown University. He describes to me his reaction to the new sanctions imposed on Russia for its alleged 2016 election interference.
Well, my initial reaction is, what took them so long? The Trump administration has really been flat-footed in responding to information from both the intelligence agencies and the special investigators' inquest into penetration into the U.S. election. There have been 13 Russians who are indicted. Some of them have been part of the sanctions announced today. And so I think that this is an overdue step, and I'm guessing that the move was to some extent motivated by what has happened in the U.K., the poisoning of the former Russian intelligence agent, because the U.S., again, was sort of accepting itself from the consensus that has built in Europe that Russia is responsible for the poisoning and needs to be held accountable.
And yet there are two such separate incidents.
Of the poisoning?
Yes, the poisoning and the alleged interference in the 2016 election.
They are separate incidents, but the poisoning and the hacking, the Russian intervention in Syria, the Russian intervention in Ukraine, all of this adds up to a situation in which Russia has essentially unveiled a very aggressive and conflictual approach to the United States and its Western allies. And I think many people feel, myself included, that our response has been insufficient, especially when it comes to the hacking issue. We really haven't done much other than close a few installations and expel some Russian diplomats. But we know that here in the United States, in Italy, in the UK, in France, across the Western democracies, the Russians have been interfering in our electoral processes, essentially in a cost-free manner.
Well, meanwhile, also today, the leaders of Britain, France, Germany, and the United States have jointly condemned the poisoning of former Russian spy Sergei Skripal and his daughter, and this occurred in a town in England. The fact that all four countries joined in this, that really says a lot.
It is an important message to Moscow that there is a united front, and I think the best way that the United States can push back against Russia is by remaining in lockstep with its partners. One of the objectives of Putin in interfering in the West is to divide and conquer. He wants to create polarization within the United States, within the UK. He was in favor of Brexit, of the UK leaving the European Union. And this is all about weakening the West, reducing its ability to serve as a counterweight to Russia, and to have the US and its key European allies stand shoulder to shoulder in responding and condemning what looks like a Russian nerve gas attack in the UK is the best way to send a message back to Putin.
Well, and I suppose also the fact that one country, this occurred in one country, these other countries like France, Germany, and the U.S., it could happen in their countries as well.
It could happen anywhere where there is a Russian who the Russians feel was turned against them, someone who was a double agent, some former intelligence agent now living in the West that they want to punish and send a message that you're not going to get away with this. And so it could happen anywhere.
Charles Kupchan, senior fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations and a professor at Georgetown University. Well, joining me is social media editor Doug Bernard. So, Doug, what's trending?
Sarah, good to see you. And of course, today is March 15,
yes.
Just the same as any other day. But as you actually pointed out just a little bit ago as we were talking, today is the day that's known of the Ides of March. For those who don't know, this was the day back in 44 BC that the Roman Emperor Julius Caesar was murdered, stabbed. I believe it was on the steps of the Pompey Theater, or it might have been in the Roman Senate. I've heard two different versions. But anyway, he was murdered, stabbed in the back several times by a number of senators, including those who allegedly were his friends as well. So it's become sort of a touchstone day. In some ways, it's sort of a bad luck day, I suppose, mm-hmm. sort of a Friday the 13th. But people are having some fun with it. One of the most common, big hashtag on social media, of course, is hashtag Ides of March. You're seeing lots of images. People, I saw several people posting like a bottle of Caesar salad dressing with a knife stuck in the back. These are just a few of the comments I see. Let's see. Brutus, wait, which one's my seat again? Julius, sighs. A2, Brute.
Oh, no.
That's, I don't know, it makes me laugh. So this Roman centurion goes into a bar and orders a martinis. The bartender asks, do you mean a martini? Centurion says, look, if I wanted a double, I'd tell you.
Oh, no.
I suppose these are bad. Let's see. 2,000 years ago, Julius Caesar was stabbed in the back by traitors on the Ides of March. Today, traitors try to have our president removed by paying Russians for a phony dossier and using it to bring bogus criminal charges. So even a day like today, people find a way to inject politics into it. Here was one comment that kind of made me laugh a little bit. People are losing the spirit of the Ides of March. It's not just about stabbing. It's about coming together to stab in groups.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
So it's a bit of a change. I mean, we've seen so much seriousness and sort of divisiveness, in social media on any number of topics. I think people just having a bit of fun today.
Thanks very much, Doug. That's social media editor Doug Bernard. Here are some of the top news stories that are trending. Thousands of civilians flee the last major stronghold outside of Damascus. President Trump boasts of making up a trade claim in meeting with Canada's Prime Minister Justin Trudeau. Turkey's foreign minister postpones a visit to the United States following the firing of Secretary of State Rex Tillerson. And North Korea's foreign minister heads to Sweden. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute. When you think of a Neanderthal, what comes to mind? A crude, brutish, and uncaring caveman type of individual? According to a new analysis by the UK's University of York, that stereotype may not be true. In a study published by the journal World Archaeology, the researchers provide evidence that our ancient human ancestor was actually caring and compassionate. Researchers found that Neanderthals were quite knowledgeable and were able to provide effective health care for others regardless of the severity of the injury or illness. According to the study's lead author, Dr. Penny Spickens of the University of York, the research findings indicate that when providing needed care, Neanderthals didn't really consider whether those they helped would return the favor, but merely reacted to their own feelings of seeing their loved ones suffering. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, U.S. students demand an end to gun violence. In a race with national implications, Democrat Connor Lamb declared victory in a very close special congressional election held Tuesday in Pennsylvania. Lamb holds a lead of several hundred votes over Republican candidate Rick Sancone, a strong supporter of President Donald Trump. The apparent Democratic victory in what has been a reliably Republican district could be a sign of things to come as both parties prepare for this year's midterm congressional elections. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone has more from Washington.
Democrats celebrate the apparent victory of Connor Lamb in Pennsylvania.
It took a little longer than we thought, but we did it.
Campaigning as a moderate Democrat, Lamb ran surprisingly strong in a district that President Trump carried by nearly 20 points.
We fought to find common ground, and we found it almost everywhere. Democrats, Republicans, independents, each of us Americans.
Republican Rick Sacone was not ready to concede the race.
We're going to fight all the way to the end. You know I never give up.
Sacone cast himself as the president's wingman, and Trump campaigned on his behalf just days earlier.
The whole world, remember that, they're all watching. We want to keep it going. We want to keep the agenda, the Make America Great going. You got to get them in. This is a very important race.
The Pennsylvania result follows on the heels of Democratic victories last year in Virginia and Alabama, perhaps setting the stage for a difficult midterm election for the president, according to Larry Sabato.
The opposition to Donald Trump is as intense as I have seen since the last year of Nixon's presidency. It is so intense, it's so hot, that it could result in a much bigger turnover than we think in the midterm elections to the Democrats away from the Republicans.
Some Republicans see the race as a wake-up call looking ahead to November, including Kevin Cramer of North Dakota.
I think for Republicans the message has to be run on what we've done and what we're doing because we have a good record.
Midterm elections historically are unkind to sitting presidents, notes analyst Michael Barone.
The party of the president is generally going to be held responsible for what the president and the administration have done, particularly when, as now, Republicans have a majority in both houses. So there's a vulnerability there.
And a Democratic victory in Trump country is a major warning sign for Republicans, says Sabato.
The fact that a Democrat managed to win in that district suggests that Republicans in easily 100 districts around the country who are incumbents now have to worry because they're representing places that went for Trump by much less.
Democrats need a gain of 24 House seats and 2 Senate seats to reclaim congressional majorities in November. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
Thousands of students rallied across the United States on Wednesday demanding an end to gun violence. Mike O'Sullivan reports the school walkouts and memorials came 1 month after the school shooting in Parkland, Florida that claimed 17 lives.
Students gathered on the streets of New York City.
Every day students are dying and no one's doing anything about it and we don't like it. And enough is enough.
We will not be silent!
And Atlanta.
I'm fighting for gun control in
and to stop gun violence.
In Oakland, they remembered the victims in Florida.
Look, I don't want to be a victim.
Through speeches and music, and also the victims of gun violence closer to home.
Like, I had a cousin that got shot. He was just walking down the block. And I got my friend Davon, he got shot. They just talked about him. Yeah, I got a couple friends that got shot, family members that have been paralyzed.
A somber school assembly in Ottawa, Illinois, honored the 17 killed in Florida. Students say it was not a political event or against gun ownership.
It really wasn't. We're just trying to help people feel safe while being here at school.
How to end the violence? Some students want a ban on high-powered assault weapons like the one used in Florida. Others want to raise the age for buying guns, hire more armed school police, or even armed teachers. The debates are emotional, but these students say that something must be done.
If we don't make a change, it will never stop. It will be the same thing. Hear about a shooting, cry about it, move on.
The gun issue has made this student an activist in her home state of California.
We want state legislators to know that we want our voices to be heard. I think given Parkland's shooting victims, and they've risen up and they've had a whole legislation movement in Florida, it's kind of inspired me personally to use my voice.
For some, the message highlights student safety. For others, that students can make a difference.
The youth are learning that we have a voice. And as we're getting older, we're learning that we can use that voice to make a difference and to make change.
Renewed activism from a new generation of students. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Los Angeles.
This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there. Bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hi, this is Larry London, the host of VOA's Border Crossing. I feature music and interviews with your favorite artists from all around the world. And you can not only listen, but you can interact live with us here in Washington, D.C. Border Crossings comes to you Monday through Friday at 1500 UTC GMT on VOA.
This is International Edition. Oscar-nominated filmmaker Ava DuVernay is the first woman of color to direct a Disney live-action movie that exceeds a $100 million budget. Her film, A Wrinkle in Time, about a 13-year-old biracial girl who travels through space and time to save her father, offers the message of selflessness and courage. VOA's Penelope Pulu has more.
Where are we?
We heard a cry out in the universe.
My father's alive.
It has been 4 years since Meg's father disappeared. Trying to prove his theory that one can travel through space and time with one's mind power and love, Professor Murray, a theoretical physicist, finally succeeds and walks off into another dimension where he ends up tangled in a dark world.
Father's trapped by evil energy.
It's too strong for our light.
And the only one who can stop it is you. Be a warrior.
Storm Reid plays young Meg.
She grows throughout the movie and she, like, becomes noble and she becomes herself. So she is just strong and she empowers not only herself but the people around her.
Mrs. Watsit, Mrs. Who, and Mrs. Witch are three celestial beings who guide Meg as she finds the inner strength to fight evil and save her father.
Can you help us find him?
Reese Witherspoon plays Mrs. Watsit.
Oh, he did? Really?
I think about how few times we get to see young women at the center of
big Hollywood movies, but also women of color. And that little girls out there will know that, you know, they see themselves on screen in this real way with this wonderful girl, that anything is possible.
The film is based on a 1962 science fiction novel by Madeleine L'Engle with a theme that explores the conflict between good and evil. The film uses the same themes to condemn racial discrimination, social exclusion, and bullying. A Wrinkle in Time offers a multiracial cast, mainly of women, with Ava DuVernay, a female director, at the helm. DuVernay describes the main character as an ordinary girl who does extraordinary things and saves the universe.
Trust nothing.
Darling, time for dinner. Are you lost?
You don't have to be on the inside of a box to be a hero. Outsiders can be heroes. People who think and look differently can be heroes.
One of these people is Ava DuVernay herself, a filmmaker who picked up a camera for the first time at 32 and now, an Oscar nominee at 45, took a classic tale and infused it with her personal vision and style.
I think that the particular discipline, organization, an artful eye that Ava brings to the work inspires everybody who's working for her.
Oprah Winfrey supported DuVernay's vision and film production. She also plays Mrs. Switch, the grand dame of the three celestial guardians.
I think it's an incredible time to be a woman in Hollywood. I think it's a time of more acknowledgement, more opportunity than we've ever had. To have Ava DuVernay at the center of this $100 million gigantic Disney production is a watershed moment.
The only thing faster than light is the darkness.
Penelope Pulu, VOA News, Washington.
And that is our show. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
30 years ago, on March 16, 1988, and just before the start of the Al-Anfal operation, the regime of then-president of Iraq, Saddam Hussein, committed one of the worst atrocities of the modern era: the murder by poison gas of thousands of civilians in the Kurdish-Iraqi town of Halabja. As part of a genocidal campaign against the Kurds and other ethnic groups in northern Iraq, government forces spent 2 days shelling the city of Halabja with rockets and napalm, an incendiary gel that sticks to skin and causes terrible burns. On the second day, March 16th, they suddenly changed tactics. Attacking aircraft began to pepper the civilian parts of the city with canisters of chemical weapons, including mustard gas and the nerve agent sarin, tabin, and VX. That day, some 3,500 to 5,000 people died within minutes. Another 7,000 to 10,000 were injured, crippled, or suffered long-term health problems. Although there is some evidence that Saddam Hussein's forces had used chemical agents before March 16, 1988, the attack on Halabja is thought to be the first documented assault by Saddam Hussein's forces using chemical weapons. But it would not be the last. Early in 1987, Saddam Hussein authorized the use of chemical weapons in attacks on as many as 24 Kurdish villages. For his role in these heinous attacks, the dictator's cousin and the campaign's commander, Ali Hassan al-Majid, earned the nickname Chemical Ali. The Al-Anfal campaign was a series of horrific crimes perpetrated by Iraqi leaders against their own civilian population. The gassing of the citizens of Halabja was one of the worst atrocities perpetrated by Saddam Hussein against his own people. For his part in it and for other crimes, Chemical Ali was executed by hanging. The Iraqi Special Tribunal dropped charges against Saddam Hussein himself, only because he was executed after being convicted in a separate case. The head of government has a responsibility to the country and to its people to act in their best interest. Ultimately, few dictators die in bed or exit the scene of their crimes gracefully. the fate of those who instigated the Al-Anfal and killed thousands of innocents in Halabja should serve as a warning to others who follow in their murderous footsteps.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.